together because for the last 2 years, our lives have been just kind of so closely intertwined that it seemed to make sense to kind of narrate this together. Also, we have a lot to say, and we're not going to get to say everything we wish we could say, and we're going to be moving pretty quickly and saying less than we would like to say about everything.
Just that we wish we had 2 hours, and we're going to try to fit it into 40 minutes or so.
Is mine on? Okay. So we're going to kind of jump in on a serious note and pre-pandemic a little bit, because it's an important part of the lead into our pandemic story. And part of what Boone said about how there's a lot to say, a lot has happened in our family over the last 2 years. And there might be some of these stories that you've heard pieces of, and there might be some that you haven't. So just, you know, be aware. So in about 2019, but kind of ramping up the few years before that, I was really unhappy in my job. I was a teacher for 14 years in elementary. I taught mostly third grade, second grade. And then as I started becoming really unhappy, I switched to first grade, thinking that that might be the change that kind of made everything better. That's not always the case. I could do a whole class on that, on the decision to leave education. And I guess all I would say about it is there's a lot of guilt and shame wrapped up in that for me, because teaching is a really well-respected profession in some ways. What I mean by that is that people think you're good when you're a teacher, and that is very much wrapped up into my identity. I very much want to be seen as a good person, as someone who's doing something good and something important. And I had to really wrestle with, if I choose to leave this job that is slowly killing me, I might not be seen as good of a person, and that I am abandoning this profession and these kids and these families that I've cared so much about. But it was very much dismantling me. I was losing a lot of myself in the system of education, and tried to make some of those things better, and continually learned that that's not possible, which was also really disconcerting. So around 2019, it was really getting dire. I was very unhappy and felt very stuck and felt a lot of shame for wanting to leave that profession. So that was pre-pandemic, but sort of ramping up to it.
So sit with that while you listen to this. In 2018, I first applied for a design job at Lego. It was late 2018. I submitted applications and resume and portfolio. By this time, 2019, so it's now been 3 years ago, they invited me to Denmark for a two-day design workshop where they gave us challenges and had face-to-face interviews. And so of the hundreds of applications that they receive for those jobs every time they open, I was one of, you know, about 20 people that was invited over. And I think 8 to 12 of those people were offered jobs after that workshop. So I got very close 3 years ago, and I was not offered a job at that time. It was a very long process. I applied in probably November or December of 2018, and it wasn't until late May or June that they were finally telling me, you know, we thought you were great, we hope you apply again, but we're not offering you a job. It was at least a six-month process, and that's an important piece to remember as we move forward. But I didn't get the job then, 3 years ago. Later that year, I applied for Lego Masters, And Mark and I were
I think on. An important thing to say about that time, though, that you applied was kind of connected to what I just talked about my job, is that we really thought that Boone getting that job was going to save us, especially me. It was going to save me from the situation that I found myself in, where I felt really stuck and there's no way out. I was bringing the income, the insurance, I was bringing everything with my job, so I couldn't just leave my job. So if Boone got that job, we would be saved. It was just, you'll get that job, we'll be saved. And so when he didn't get that job, it felt devastating, because now we are, especially me, even more stuck, and now there's no way out. So that was a particularly devastating time to not get that job. More for me. More for me. Go ahead. So Lego Masters, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. I think the other thing, too, is, like, just imagine. I mean, I'm sure you've been in situations where, you know, for some season of life, like 6 months, you're anticipating this thing, and it seems like it's getting closer and closer and closer to reality. And as much as we would tell ourselves, and this will become relevant again later in this story, as much as we would tell ourselves we can't bank on that happening.
You kind of do.
It was impossible to not live with it every single day. Okay. Didn't happen. In the summer, applied for Lego Masters with my friend Mark. We ended up taping the show in fall of 2019. So this is still 6 months before pandemic. This is still the intro.
We gotta pick it up.
Yeah, we gotta pick it up.
So, I think you guys know a lot about the Lego Masters time. I don't think we need to say a lot about that, except for that, if you can imagine where I was before Lego Masters, and then I was alone for 2 months with the kids, with the job that was really being difficult for me, and that was the most difficult year of teaching I've ever had. I had multiple kids that were very violent and were hurting me and throwing things at me, and it was an awful time of teaching, and I was alone with the kids and had incredible family support that I couldn't have survived without, but it was a really hard time. And so when Boone came home from Lego Masters, I said, that's it. I cannot continue. These 2 months, you know, have really shown me how much that job is just taking from me, and I have to be done. So when he came home from Lego Masters, it was like, that's it. So we were like, Danny's going to quit her job. We don't know what that means.
Yeah, I said, can you make it to the end of the year? You're contracted to the end of the year. Can you make it? Or does this need to be like an immediate thing? And she said, I can make it to the end of the year. And I said, okay, so, you know, at the end of the year, or I guess it was like September, because she was getting paid through the summer. So I was like, in September, we have to be doing something different. And, you know, I don't want to get too far into that. I had been working part-time at TOK at the time. Before that, I was doing video production with my friend Chris West. And that sort of, as Charlie particularly was getting, you know, she was a baby and then she was getting a little bit older, I was sort of working less and less and, like, being home with Charlie and Jordy more and more. What was my point there? I guess just to say that, like, you know, we have these dreams about what the show might air and we might be able to build a business. But worst case scenario, I go back to video production or I go back to IT and I get a full-time job with benefits, and that's what we're doing in September. But we've got 6 months to try to figure out if we can build our own business. And so we kind of developed this thing that we would say to each other starting in December of 19. We would say every day before September for every day after September. And it was just kind of this, we wake up in the morning and we don't know what's coming, but we knew that by saying every day before September for every day after September was orienting ourselves to this notion that we were seeking the opportunities that we might establish or grab hold of to try to build something in that amount of months.
And so that was it, the school year, so that was December. And then in March, the pandemic started. So that was kind of our ramp up to the pandemic. So when the pandemic started, something that happened immediately was all school went online. And I was teaching first grade, and as you've heard Bill talk about Julie and you know, Kristen talk about school, teaching online is very challenging, especially with six-year-old children. And I will not undersell how challenging that was, but if I'm going to be perfectly honest, it was the life raft that I needed. When that happened and we went online, I felt like the elephant that had been sitting on me was lifted, because teaching online had its challenges, but nobody was throwing things at me, nobody was scratching me and hurting me, I didn't have screaming, I didn't, you know, all of the things that were happening in my classroom that were very toxic and unsafe, all of those things were eliminated because we were just sitting in front of computers. And so it was different. I mean, it was challenging in a different way, but for me, it was what I needed to get through those months. And so I, again, felt some shame about how, you know, everybody else was struggling so much, and I was over here like, this is actually the greatest thing that could have happened to me. I feel so much better. So it was actually a great thing for me. It was very challenging for Jordy, who was in third grade, so I was trying to teach online and help her. So those things were challenging. But the other thing that happened that was actually sort of great about that was Boone and I had been doing this every day before September, thinking, you know, okay, once school's out, we can start working together and trying to build whatever this business is.
Like in June.
So all of a sudden, I'm not going to my job anymore. And we were like, we could start now. So let's just go ahead and start now. So I kept teaching online, but we started going ahead and working together months before we had anticipated, which felt like really exciting.
So I was doing like commission work, Lego builds for companies that wanted a replica of their logo or their business site or something like that. I was doing a lot of online, you know, there was YouTube, there was selling plans online. Suddenly with the show on national television, I was getting all these requests for like birthday videos for kids or family members, and we would just... There was a season of life where we were doing those like three or four a day, and we would do them for free, but we would tell people, we would give people the PayPal in case they wanted to send some money. And sometimes people would you know, graciously take advantage of the fact that we were offering it for free. Sometimes people would send $15. Sometimes people would send $100 for something that took me 30 seconds to do. It was weird. But we were kind of cobbling all of these different little revenue streams together. And in the month of April, so this is, you know, the first kind of full month after the beginning of the pandemic, we brought in through this kind of freelance Lego business enough money for that month to replace Danny's salary per month. So it was this, all of a sudden, like this, oh my gosh, this glimmer of like, we could do this, but we have no idea. We have no idea if we can do this again.
Yeah, we did it one time, one month.
You know, for even 2 months, let alone for the rest of our lives or for the foreseeable future or whatever.
But it was that little, like, this, you, when you see it happen for the first time, now it's not just this abstract idea, you see it happening, and that sort of gives you the, you know, like, oh, well, if we could just keep trying. So as we were, you know, getting excited about that, I had an idea.
Well, can I just say real quick, it was just kind of this every morning waking up thinking like, what is the next thing going to be? And for those of you that are self-employed, you get it. Like, it's like, where is the next check going to come from? When is the next call going to come in? When are we going to get the next email that's going to, like, give us a little security that we might be able to make it another month?
Yeah, so I had an idea because, you know, I was still teaching online, and everything, you know, the pandemic was really in full swing. It didn't seem like anything was lightening up soon. And I just, in conversations with the kids in my class and families, I had an idea that, you know, when summer started, there would be no camps for kids to go to. And I thought, maybe if we created like a virtual Lego camp that families could offer their kids that was pretty like self-directed, that maybe that's something people would really need at this point in the pandemic. So I kind of brought the idea to Boone. He didn't like the idea.
I was imagining being in a Zoom call with like 26-year-olds. And I was like, no.
What would that be like? I have no idea. but it was, I mean, it was, that's not his, you know, skill. But I think this is a great example of our working relationship is I brought that. He was like, no, I don't want to do that. Here's why. Here's what I'm picturing. So then I went back and was like, okay, what could I eliminate? Like, how could I change the structure of that so that it addresses the things that he's concerned about? And then I came back and was like, what if we did it this way? And he was like, oh, I don't know. I'm just not into it. And so then I went back and was like, how could I really like sell this to him and really convince him to do it? So I think it three times I tried, all to say, finally I convinced him to do it.
Don't forget that the camp was her idea, because that's going to be really important in a minute.
Yeah, so I got him, so I convinced him to do it. It was like, okay, this could maybe be the next thing that could bring in some revenue. And then Rob Bell, right?
Yeah, so basically we decided to do the camp. We were not going to launch it right away. It was going to happen in the summer. We just knew that we had to build it between then and the summer. But we had decided that that was the next thing. The virtual Lego build camp was the next thing that we were going to try to make the thing.
Make the thing. And we're both, especially me, I was trying to do a lot of self-work during this time just because I was struggling so much with the shame I was feeling around my job. And, you know, there's some jobs, and if you work in education, you know this, there's also jobs like ministry where that job is your identity. It is who you are, and you can't separate who you are from that job. And so I was really struggling with, I don't know who I am apart from doing this. And so I was doing lots of self-work, and there was some, I was listening to lots of podcasts, reading lots of books, and there was something I heard from a few different sources, but I remember it specifically from Rob Bell, where he was talking about, you know, we're always waiting, this is 100% me, we're always waiting for like, yeah, I'll happily walk through that next door once it's nicely opened for me, and I can see that it's there, and then I'll walk from there to here, and then I'd be happy to walk through that door. And he's like, sometimes you have to close the door and kind of stand in the dark for a minute before that next door opens. And I was like, well, I don't want to do that. But it really became clear, like, that's what's going to happen. I had tried lots of ways to get out of the situation I was in, and it just wasn't happening. And so we kind of decided, I think that we are going to have to close the door on this with no security about what's going to happen next. And that was terrifying. There's lots of worry about what are people going to think about that? Are they going to think that I or we are irresponsible? You know, we've got kids, you know, all these things. So, but it really seemed clear, like, this is what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to close the door. So we had the idea for the camp. It was like, we don't know. It's just an idea. But it kind of came time where I had to make a decision about my job. And so I got on a call with HR. And in education, you can take a leave of absence. So you don't necessarily have to completely quit. But they hold a job for you, but you don't get any, you know, salary or benefits or anything like that. So on a Thursday, I had the meeting, and I resigned from my job with the leave of absence. And I felt so free, so happy. But there was this, like, we don't know where our income is going to come from, and this feels really scary. So that was a Thursday.
And on Saturday, I created one post on Instagram, which my following there had grown quite a bit through the airing of the show. And on Saturday, I just created a post with a logo that said Boone's Build Camp. And we had built nothing. And we knew that we had to build a website. We had to write curriculum, and we had to tape videos and edit videos. We knew we had 2 months of work to do. So we decided to launch, and this is in May, right? Yeah. We decided to launch like just after the 4th of July. And we made one post in May with just a picture and a link to a pre-sale. And that was Saturday after the Thursday that she said she wanted her leave of absence. And by Monday, we had like $20,000 in PayPal from the pre-sales of the camp for that we hadn't built yet.
So we needed to build it.
So then we were on the hook. We were on the hook to build this thing by the time we said we were going to launch it, which
really
was like 2 months
hook.
Later. But it was this immediate confirmation of like, you had to take that leap of faith, mm-hmm. not knowing, and you didn't even have to wait a week for some confirmation that you're going to be okay.
And then, so that was in May that we did the pre-sale. We started the camp in July, and by August, we had banked my entire yearly salary. So in just a couple of months, all that worry about, you know, we can't survive without my salary. By August, we had the whole year. And so it was sort of this like, okay, we've got a year to figure out if we can make this work. And this is working right now.
Yeah, and I think an important piece of that is 2020 was the summer that everyone needed something virtual to do online. So that's why it worked.
So it was a good idea, is what he's saying. So during that time, you know, obviously, so we're into that, you know, we're just neck deep in that. Jordy's finishing school online. Summer was really challenging because we were running that virtual camp with a lot of participants and trying to figure out how do we work together. There was nothing for our kids to do during the summer. It would have been great if they had had a virtual camp of some kind to do. They sort of liked ours, but not a ton. So we're just trying to figure it out, right? Just like everybody, but there was nowhere to go. There was nothing to do. And so we're in the work now. We are working together. Every day is really busy. I had taken over all of the communication and the logistics. So all the people who ask Boone to do all the things constantly was all sort of my responsibility, and we were trying to make Boone's responsibility creatives, like just the creatives.
And she was pretending to be me in those emails at the beginning. And at some point we decided it's better if people know they're actually talking to you and that you're part of my business.
Yeah. So we started, because again, sort of with that camp thing, I was trying to figure out how to communicate with Boone about all the logistics and, we wanted him to just be creative, but I'm over here trying to manage all the logistical things, and so I'm trying to figure out, how do I come to you and talk about things? When do you have the space? You know, we're just trying to figure it out. It's just new. And so we started having a morning meeting every morning. We would set aside time and be like, this is our morning meeting. I would compile a list of all the things that I needed to talk to him about that I couldn't get going without his input, and then I would just bring him all those things in the morning, and then we would kind of go our separate responsibilities. But we started noticing that during those morning meetings, there would be some tension. Sometimes we would have some disagreements about, priorities, what I, thought we should be focusing on, and we would have some communication issues, and when you are a married couple working together, that's an interesting dynamic. So
I think an important piece of that is she was really carrying the burden of where is the money going to come from, how are we going to live, how are all these things going to get done, and I really wanted to live in that creative space, mm-hmm. right? And so sometimes we would just not align. And a day might be colored by a disagreement we had in the morning. And that wasn't happening all the time, but it was happening more often than we
wanted
it to happen. So we wrote what we call Liturgy of the Morning Meeting to orient ourselves to
each other.
Care for each other during those meeting times. So we'll read it.
We honestly do this every morning.
Yeah, we do it every morning. Sometimes not on Sundays or sometimes not on Saturdays.
But definitely every weekday.
We do it every weekday. Liturgy of the morning meeting. Morning meeting is about to begin. First, we must briefly check in so we might each understand something about how the other enters this time. We will resist the urge to solve any problems during check-in, but merely listen to each other express the state of our being as we enter morning meeting. And then we would ask these five questions. Did you take your medication? Because if a person is supposed to take a medication and they haven't taken their medication, it might affect how they engage a meeting. What is one thing that didn't work yesterday? And we ask these questions to each other. So I would ask Danny, what is one thing that didn't work yesterday? And she would answer, and then she would ask me. And what is one thing that worked yesterday? How did you sleep?
That makes a big
difference.
Because
it was almost, 60% of the time, how did you sleep last night affected the communication, right? Yeah. And what do you bring with you leading up to this moment? And we sometimes answering those five questions takes 10 minutes, and sometimes it takes an hour. And sometimes we feel like taking an hour feels too long, but the effects of always doing it and taking as long as we need to do it are worth it.
Yep, every time.
So we always do it. We'd answer those back and forth. And we really, like the previous sentence said, we try not to solve problems while listening to the answers of these questions. We can do that almost immediately later, but sometimes it's hard to try to avoid that. But okay, next slide.
I think the other thing that's good about those questions, just really quick, is as we've gotten into the practice of doing that, I think about those questions throughout the day. So I'll think about like, oh man, this didn't work. And tomorrow at our meeting, I'm gonna talk about, you know, this thing that we tried to do yesterday didn't work. And here's why I think. So, you know, I'm being reflective about what I'm gonna bring to answer those questions the next day.
Morning meeting is about to begin. It is a sacred time. It is a time set apart from the rest of the day to ask and answer the questions of the day with care, calm, and thoughtfulness. Next. Morning meeting is about to begin. It is a valuable time. It is a time when the topics we discuss and the decisions we make will drop like stones into the current of our shared future. Rippling out, they will have a lasting impact on the current of that river, the success or failure of our shared endeavor. Morning meeting is about to begin. It is a shared, safe space. It is a time for us to remember that neither of us could do this alone. Everything is only possible because we work together. We enjoy being together and we experience day-to-day freedoms that many other working couples and individuals do not have the opportunity to experience. We are glad to be working together and we will always do our best to treat each other accordingly. Let the morning meeting begin. And it changed our lives. And I don't know what the morning meeting is, I don't know what the liturgy is going to look like when I'm going back to a full-time job, but we can't abandon it completely because it just, and it's not that we don't still have disagreements, but it's totally changed.
They're postured very differently. They're just postured differently. So that was incredibly transformative and is continually transformative. And, you know, because we are a married couple and co-parents and co-workers, you know, all kinds of things could come up during that liturgy. So things about our kids, you know, we talk about things going on with our kids. It wasn't like it was just about our business. It was our whole life, things with our relationships with people, just, you know, everything could come up during that. Speaking of our kids, Jordy was doing her entire fourth grade year online, and she struggled with some things during that time. Charlie did kindergarten all online, which is not how kindergarten is supposed to go. And an important part of that was not what we imagined when I resigned from my job. I didn't want to be a stay-at-home mom necessarily, and I did not want to be a homeschool teacher. But I was thrust into that, so that was not what we thought my responsibilities were going to be or that we would have to do together. So that added a lot of challenge as well. At the very end of the school year, our kids got to go to school for 2 days a week for 2.5 hours. And those 2.5 hours were like...
How many weeks do you think it was? It was like 4 or 5 weeks, right?
Maybe six. Yeah, I don't know. It was not for very long. So that whole time, we're always trying to figure out, like, so the camp went really well, but we're always trying to figure out what's next. We have to keep generating an income. So what's next? So just kind of always doing that.
And yeah, we had a little bit of, we're way behind. We're not going to do all this. We had a little bit of this, like the camp worked. We were able to bank all that money. We had other projects that worked, and we had a little bit of guilt from time to time of like, it seems like everybody else, it seems like a lot of people out there in the world are literally having like the worst time of their life right now during the pandemic. And it sort of seems like we're flourishing. And so we would sort of like quietly celebrate, but also like quietly feel guilty about that.
So
I still don't know what to do with that.
Yeah. You want to just talk about that job process really quickly?
Real quick. So 2 years after I was in Billund, after I was in Denmark doing that interview, I get an email. So this is January 2021, and they want me to interview again. And that process took...
That one went on for a
That
really
took three
long.
Or four months of just waiting, because they brought me into the process toward the end of the process, but then they had some sort of internal restructure that just caused it to... It never happened. And about four... So we got back into that, like, oh my gosh, is this going to happen? Are we going to move to Denmark? After about 4 months of waiting again, after having done it 2 years previously, they said, unfortunately, due to some restructuring, we're not going to be doing any hiring. So the manager called me directly, which was a little bit more personal than that process tends to be. It's a little bit more like automated, but the manager called me directly and he said, you are one of the people I would have loved to bring on my team. Unfortunately, because of this thing, we're not hiring anybody. Hope you try again, you know.
So, you know, with the always waiting, you know, what's the next thing going to be? How are we going to keep making money? Well, during that time, while we thought maybe that job was going to work out again, we didn't take any more jobs because we thought, well, we don't want to commit to a job and then be like, oh, sorry, we're moving to Denmark, and have to pull out. So we stopped taking jobs for a while. And so then when the job didn't work out again, it was like, well, now we're back to having to figure out what's next. And we've done nothing for the last couple of months. So that was not a great place to be. That was a really discouraging time as well. But we just kind of got back to it and kept trying to figure out. I'm just going to skip through this quickly. Yeah. We had a couple really big jobs. We made three more camps because the camps had gone so well. We made three more, but none of them ever performed as well as that first one when people really needed it. So just constantly like, okay, the camp was sort of our big successful thing. You know, we're accepting jobs from other people, but we also feel like we need to come up with something that's going to be the next big revenue. So it's just that constant uncertainty and hustling and things like that. So this is about the time in the pandemic time where we came back to church.
Yeah, so we came back to church a year ago, just under a year ago. And it seemed like everyone was really excited. And I mean, we came back to the building. It seemed like everyone was really excited to be back together, you know, the people who were coming at that time. And that excitement sort of like, it didn't really, like all the little bits of like how, and I know Kevin and others put a tremendous amount of work into the how of every gathering. But there were a lot of things that didn't matter because it was so good to be back together. And, you know, the 9:30 is one of them, right? It was like, okay, we're going to do what we can, and it's so good to be back together. So, you know, we had done this Jamulus thing for the music all through pandemic, and then all of a sudden we were, like, back in the room, like, singing together again. And I started, you know, leading singing. And then sometime, this is kind of hard to connect to, but sometime after that, like, excitement kind of started wearing off, like the excitement of just being back in the room together started wearing off for me personally in around like August, September. And then it's just sort of back in the weeds of like, okay, how do we do this with all the different technology we're trying to use to make it work, you know, for in the room and on Zoom and all that stuff. And sometime late August or September, we were having some technical issues, and I'm trying to lead and also think about the technical issues, and I don't remember really what the... Oh, I do remember, but I'm not going to say it. I was standing right back here, and I had a panic attack, and I'd never experienced anything like that before in my life. I don't even know if I'm using those words right, but those are the words that I'm going to use to ascribe to it. It happened right there. I walked into that room and like hung out in the dark under like the hot air coming out of the furnace or something. And then I left, and I was supposed to come up here and lead singing, and I got in my car, and I sat there for a few minutes, and I almost drove away without telling anybody. I saw Carolyn Metcalf walking up, and I got out of my car so that I could walk up the hill at the same time as Carolyn. And she, I think I was crying, and she said, she said like, you know, how are you? And I said something like, you know, not good, or whatever I said. Maybe Carolyn would remember, but, and she just said something that caused me to be able to come back in. And it was something like, you know, I don't know, I'm not going to do it justice, but like, you're not alone, or like, sometimes that's where we are, you know. And I came back in, and as soon as I started singing, like three songs in, I was like, okay, I'm okay. But then I stopped singing, and I stopped coming for like 3 months. And I didn't start singing again until like maybe a couple months ago. But it was, I don't want to spend any more time on that. I guess other than to say that conversations with Kevin and Tyler about that were great. I had some other great conversations. And then Pete really gave me like some... I don't know what you call them, some tools, some things to think about when I start to recognize anxiety levels. Is that fair? Pete just gave me some things that worked really well for me, and I'll carry those with me for a long time. That was kind of an aside, but it happened, and so there you go.
Yeah, and it was, you know, part of the pandemic that led to... You know, when you're away, what we talked about a lot is, you know, we're different. We became different people during the pandemic, all of us in a lot of ways. And so then when you tried to layer back in the parts of your life that were before the pandemic, but you were different, it was hard to figure out how to layer those things back into your life. For me, that was a struggle because I'm really very introverted. And I sort of nestled right into the introverted rhythm of the pandemic, and it was good for me. It was fine for me. I was fine with it. And so then coming out of it, I feel even more introverted than I've ever been before, and that's problematic sometimes, I feel like. So just that we're different. We all became different people, and then layering those things back on. So sort of back to work stuff, and we'll try to get through this part quickly. In January of 2022, we randomly had a get-together with our friends Alan and Nora Taylor, who are Cascade people. Maybe you are familiar with them. They run, they are also a family self-employed business, and they run a website. And we just...
It's a food blog.
It's a food blog.
It's a vegan cooking blog.
Very, very successful. And we just got together with them for fun, not for any sort of specific purpose, but just, you know, we're both self-employed families. We're a couple with kids trying to run a self-employed business, and we just thought it'd be interesting to talk about, like, what that's like and, you know, how we both do that. Well, we left that time with them with, like, a completely new future idea for our business, and they are running a website. And we kind of got an idea for how we could run our business through a website that would create self-revenue in a way that we had never explored before.
And they were basically willing us to, like, they were willing to show us everything to, like, replicate their model in our niche. And that's no guarantee that it would have the same success, But at least we could look at something that we knew was working, and they were very open about how it was working, and they're very successful.
Yeah, so they were not having the anxiety that we were having about where is the money coming from every month. Their money was coming every month. They were fully supporting themselves. And so we had this, you know, path that we could follow. They were super supportive, and we were really excited about it. So I started doing all this training on SEOs, search engine optimization stuff. I was learning all this crazy stuff that I never thought I would ever, you know, be learning about.
I was building a website that now no one will ever see. We had a website. We built a website.
It was beautiful.
She was writing articles. I was building. It was incredible, and no one's ever going to see it.
Yeah.
So we're not doing that.
We just threw all our energy into that, and we were like, this is it. This is that thing that we've been waiting for. You know, what's next? What's the next thing for our business? This is it. We were so excited, and we were both working really hard and loving the work we were doing, and we're like, great, all this, you know, wandering. So
can you go here?
Yep. So Boone, we're in the midst of all that work. Boone's at lunch with a friend. I'm working on the computer, you know, doing my various responsibilities, one of which is checking all the communication. So I'm checking, you know, Boone's different communication outlets to see if there's things I need to respond to. And I see an email from Lego requesting Boone for a second interview for a senior design position. And I was like, he has not had a first interview, for starters. This is a senior design position. And I started thinking, did he apply and interview for a job without telling me? Doesn't seem like he would, but I was like, you know, I just had that pit, you know, that drop in my stomach of like, what is this? So I spent all this time trying to contact him. I couldn't get him. But it was like, they want you for this second interview. So at the same time that is going on, we're doing this massive giveaway of all these Lego sets, and we talked about it's almost like this preconceived, like we knew in our souls we needed to start getting rid of stuff. So we were doing that, and we talk about this drive. We were on the west side at the Lego store, and we were driving home, and we were talking about the interview, you know, that he's having this second interview for this job that he didn't even apply for and all these things. And I said, you know what, if the job works out this time, I'm going to be real annoyed, because all the other times that you almost got the job, we needed it. It was going to save us. It was always this, it'll save us from the situation that we're in. And this time, we don't need saving. We're in a good place. We feel good about what we're doing.
I'm really excited about the potential of this thing we're building.
So all those other times, it would have, you know, been this savior out of our situation. And if this is the time it works out, I'm going to be so irritated. And I should have known that that meant this was the time it was going to work out.
So I had an interview at 2 a.m. because that's like 10 a.m. in Denmark. And I felt like it went really well. Of all the interviews I've had in the last 4 years with them, I felt like it was the best feeling I felt after coming out of an interview. Got in bed just a little after 3. She woke up, talked just a little bit, and then we went to sleep. And we woke up the next morning, and we're doing our morning meeting. We're going through the liturgy. We're answering the questions. And we're preparing ourselves to wait months before knowing
time.
The answer to this interview, because that's what we had experienced. And finished the meeting, and we kind of went, you know, our separate ways. And I had left my phone on the nightstand, and I went and grabbed it. And I had missed a call from Denmark during our meeting. And so I called back, and I was like, Danny, I missed a call from Denmark. And I called back, and it was the hiring manager named Animetta, and she said, I just have one more question for you. And I was like, okay, so she had a question that she didn't get around to asking during the Zoom call, and she wants to, you know, clarify something. And I said, she said, first of all, did you get some sleep? Because they didn't realize before the meeting, but of course, like, I had to explain, like, I'm really tired, you know, so she was like, did you get some sleep? I was like, yes, I got some sleep. And she said, okay, my question is, Boone, would you and Danny and your kids like to move to Denmark and join us in Lego design as a senior designer? And we were just like, dancing around the living room while I'm on the phone with this Danish woman.
And yeah.
Anything else to say about that?
Yeah, just that, you know, the thing this time was it felt like we had to choose the job. So we could have said no to the job and kept going with the website, which we, you know, had been feeling really good about. And so it wasn't that this job was going to save us from anything. We had to choose, this is the path we're going to take. And so that was really a different posture for us. And just, I mean, I know we're like, we need to wrap up, but the pandemic time, I think what it really did for us leading to this really monumental change in our life was, you know, it really oriented our family of four to each other. You know, we really had to learn to rely on our family unit and how to navigate, you know, unpredictability and changes and transitions, all four of us. And the pandemic really offered us lots of opportunities to practice that. And I think that has really put us in a really wonderful place for what we're about to do.
And did you see the flourishing thing? It just
you said that earlier.
Oh, I said that earlier?
You did, yeah. Okay. And one last kind of cool thing that happened was I took 2 years leave of absence from my job. So that first time where I had to, you know, resign and we didn't know, and then the camp started. And then a year later, I asked for a second year leave of absence, which they granted me, and they don't always. So I got that second year. They only will give you 2 years. And so after that second year, they said, you know, you have to choose. You're either coming back to your job or you are fully resigning your position. And I had a lot of anxiety about it because that was the last safety net, right? So we always sort of had this safety net, and that was it. And it, again, it felt really unsure. So I think 3 days before Boone had that interview with Lego was my deadline, and so we talked about it a lot. I sent my final resignation from the Gresham Barlow School District, and that was it. There was no safety net left. I had fully left education, and I had lots of feelings about that. And then 3 days later, he got offered that job. So again, it just felt like we closed the door not knowing, and then immediately it was like, and this is what you're going to do next. You're going to go do this. So, and I know that it doesn't always work like that for people, so I don't ever want to make it seem like all you have to do is this and that, and then everything will work out. You've heard about several times where that didn't happen for us. So that is not how it always happens, but it has been a lesson in closing some doors sometimes before you know. So now we're getting ready to move to Denmark.
We leave tomorrow. Bye. I'm just kidding. Thank you very much. Sorry we went long. Appreciate you all listening.